It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We turn to Capitol Hill to examine the debate over government funding and spending limits that Democrats and Republicans will agree to, along with other pressing issues to discuss with Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. And you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. Add your views. 800-642-1234. Senator Johnson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Happy belated New Year.
Thank you. And to you as well. So Congress approves another stopgap funding plan to avoid a partial government shutdown, allowing more time for budget negotiations. How close are Republicans and Democrats to reaching an agreement on a longer plan for funding the government?
It's hard to say. This would be the third extension, which is why I voted against it. I voted for an amendment to just do a continuing resolution for the rest of the year, so we could turn our attention to a functioning budget and appropriation process for fiscal year 2025. I'm concerned that we're going to just keep frittering away time here, not really come to an agreement before this extension runs out, do another extension, and before you know it, we'll be at the end of this fiscal year, not having funded the next one. So again, the dysfunction in Washington, D.C. is profound.
So you voted against it, though, but essentially then you would have wanted a partial government shutdown.
No, I'm actually opposed to government shutdowns, which is why I held out when we were voting on a minibus to get an amendment to bring up a bill that I passed out of my committee, Preventing Government Shutdown Act, that would have provided automatic CRs, but with some real inducements to get our act together and start passing appropriation bills. But you know, unfortunately, we only had a couple Democrats join us, not enough to get that passed through the Senate. So, no, I'm on record absolutely opposed to government shutdowns. And again, my concern is we just keep giving ourselves extensions here. There's no commitment. I mean, we've given ourselves extensions in the Senate. We haven't taken up one additional appropriation bill since that first minibus. So, again, this was just my saying, this has to stop. We should just have a year-long continuing resolution, which I voted for, to not shut the government down. But I'm wanting to restore a functioning budget and appropriation process for the next fiscal year. But by the time we actually get something done, we'll probably be halfway through the current fiscal year. This is grotesque in terms of the level of dysfunction.
Fiscal year ending September 30th. What are the key sticking points here among Republicans and Democrats?
Well, the main problem is we are massively spending money we don't have. In fiscal year 2019, total government spending was $4.4 trillion. Then the pandemic hit. The Uniparty went on a massive spending spree. And now our basic baseline is $2 trillion higher than that, $6.4 trillion. Our population since that time has increased 1.5%. Spending has increased more than 50%. It's completely out of control. You know, all we're debating here is the discretionary part of the budget, which is less than 30%. People in Washington, D.C. are just whistling by this fiscal graveyard.
This discretionary spending level, you know, we saw Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Mike Johnson earlier this month agreeing to a spending level for this fiscal year. Would you go along with that?
Well, Speaker Johnson was pretty well stuck with what Speaker McCarthy had done. My displeasure with Speaker McCarthy was that House conservatives actually got us by the debt ceiling by authoring a bill and then compromising with Republicans to pass an increase in the debt ceiling of $1.5 trillion as the start of a negotiation with the White House. Unfortunately, Speaker McCarthy didn't negotiate an increase of $1.5 trillion. He just suspended it until January 2025, which will increase the debt ceiling by about $4 trillion, again, reducing our leverage to try and bring some fiscal sanity, some spending restraint to Washington, D.C.
So a bipartisan group of senators is working on a deal that would tie security aid for Ukraine to more vigorous policies at the southern border with Mexico. Would you vote for aid to Ukraine if it's linked to additional border security enforcement?
I have said publicly I would not only vote, but I'd promote a bill that would fund Ukraine if the funding was made contingent on benchmarks being met in terms of actually securing the border. That apparently was taken off the table. Negotiators didn't even talk about metrics. So I have no idea at this point in time what the negotiators are talking about in terms of border security. It's been a secret process behind closed doors. Things have been leaked. Things have been reported. They've been denied. We have a massive problem at the border. It's a clear and present danger. Over 6 million people have been let into this country since the start of the Biden administration. About 2 million of those are gotaways. We have no idea who those people are. We basically don't know who the 6 million people are or where they reside. All the warning signals are flashing, according to FBI Director Wray, that the threat of foreign terrorist organizations is as high as it's been since 9/11. If you're a foreign terrorist organization, how would you send your fighters into America? So it's a clear and present danger. Our problem is we're negotiating with the president and Democrats in Congress who want an open border, who caused the problem. It's trying to negotiate with an arsonist to put out the fire. I do believe Democrats realize the public's being made aware now of this catastrophe at the border. So they're looking for political cover. I don't think they're particularly serious about actually securing the border.
Let's bring in Jim in Bayfield County. Jim, hi. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Kate. Thank you for letting me speak. And thank you, Senator Johnson, for coming on Wisconsin Public Radio. I feel it an honor to be able to speak to you. I'm a combat veteran of Vietnam. And I just want to tell you an experience as quickly as I can, because I know you're a busy man. January 1969, my unit, I was a medic, a hospital corpsman with the 9th Marine Amphibious Brigade. We were engaged in an operation, and we got in a firefight with the NVA, the North Vietnamese Army. And it was monsoons, and it was raining something horrible. And so we couldn't call in air support to protect us and drive the NVA away. So they knew that, and they continued the firefight. It lasted through the night and to the next morning. And it was a horrible night because we ran low on ammunition. And the next morning, my friend and his entire squad were sent to retrieve our ammunition, our resupply.
Quickly, Jim.
Mm-hmm. They were all killed. Mm-hmm. They were all killed because we didn't have enough ammunition. Now in Ukraine, right now, this day, there are Ukrainians are being killed because we don't support them as they need to.
Jim, thank you for the call. And Senator Johnson there, you're hearing that urgent call for action for additional aid to Ukraine. What do you support?
Well, Jim, first of all, thanks for your service and thanks for the question. At some point in time, you have to face the reality of the situation that Vladimir Putin will not lose this war. Losing is existential to Vladimir Putin. He has nuclear weapons. Right now, we're engaged in a bloody stalemate, and the only way this thing ends is in a negotiated settlement. The sooner the better, because every day that goes by, the settlement's going to get worse as more Ukrainians die, more Russian conscripts die, take no joy in that, more of Ukraine gets destroyed. So any aid we provide to Ukraine should really be focused on, you know, asymmetrical weapons, showing Vladimir Putin that he's going to be, you know, stuck in a long guerrilla-type warfare like he was in Afghanistan and force him to the negotiating table. We're not even discussing what kind of aid is going to go to Ukraine. We have no idea what the administration is proposing here. Quite honestly, we really don't know where the more than $100 billion that we've provided initially has gone. So, you know, we need some accountability here, and we also need a strategy in terms of what support is going to go toward Ukraine. We get none of that. We just get, again, secret negotiations. Right now, they're talking about bringing this up for vote in the Senate next week without any of us having seen even a word of text of any of this. So, again, it's as dysfunctional as Washington, D.C. is in terms of appropriation. It's as dysfunctional when it comes to very important, very complex piece of legislation like they're talking about with the supplemental and a border security bill.
We're in conversation with Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, looking at pressing issues facing Congress and hearing from you. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, getting a better sense of his position on big issues before Congress and hearing your thoughts along the way. Senator Johnson, following the situation in Yemen, President Biden approving an airstrike there targeting the Iranian-backed Houthi group after they launched drone strikes in the Red Sea. So what do you make of Biden's decision to approve the airstrike on Yemen?
Well, I think you have to first go back and analyze the decision of the Obama administration and then the Biden administration of coddling the largest state sponsor of terror, Iran. So between the two administrations, they've literally funneled hundreds of billions of dollars into the coffers of Iran and the Ayatollahs. That then is spent on their surrogates, you know, the Houthis and the Hezbollah and Hamas. And so you have to first understand that we have facilitated through coddling Iran so much of this activity. Obviously, we need to keep the sea lanes open as much as possible. A coalition of other nations that want to maintain freedom of navigation is important. We quite honestly, it would be nice if China was helping us in those efforts as opposed to probably running counter to us. So the Biden administration's foreign policy has just been a disaster. The war in Ukraine has driven Russia closer to our other adversary in terms of China. The weakness that President Biden has created throughout America with our open border, 40-year high inflation, the war on fossil fuel, the embarrassing and dangerous surrender in Afghanistan has emboldened our enemies like Iran and their proxies. And that's what we're witnessing right now. So now you're trying to mop up, trying to fix some of the results of that weakness that has emboldened our enemies.
So you approve or support the airstrikes on Yemen to root out Houthi?
Yeah. We have to respond. We have to maintain the freedom of the seas. I mean, Thomas Jefferson did that with the Barbary Coast pilots. I mean, that is why we have a Navy primarily, is to maintain free navigation. And obviously in the Mideast, navigation is extremely important. So, but we need to do it with coalition partners, and we are. It's probably too little, probably too late. But again, you've really got to analyze, you know, why do they feel so emboldened? Why are they taking this action? Well, it's because we've coddled Iran, their sponsor here, during both the Obama and the Biden administration.
Will rising tensions in the Red Sea lead to larger economic ramifications if cargo ships steer clear of that route?
Well, sure. It'll increase oil prices, further destabilize the region. These are very perilous times right now, and they're perilous because of American weakness caused by Democrat and Biden administration governance.
Let's take a call. Jim in River Falls. Jim, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having this program. So there was talk about our deficit spending and our debt, national debt, and sure, that's an issue, but it wasn't talked about at all within the Republican Party when Trump made the massive tax cuts to the super wealthy. The billionaire class and the millionaire class in this country seems to be doing just fine. It's working class people. You know, healthcare keeps going up. We're spending tons of money on insurance companies and pharmaceuticals because they don't do anything significant about that. And the Defense Department seems to get more money from both parties than they even asked for, with no question, and they don't have any sort of accountability. They don't even, you know, monitor where that money goes to in the Defense Department, which should probably be called the War Department like it was in the past. So anyway, you know, they're cutting programs that help working class people and helping the super wealthy with tax cuts.
Jim, thanks for the call. Senator Johnson, what is your response?
Well, Jim, appreciate your comments. Obviously, I disagree with you. The number one component of a solution is economic growth. So that's why you have a more competitive tax system, which I believe is completely paid for itself. I've been concerned about deficit spending ever since I got here. I vote against so much of this. The real pain that people are experiencing right now is the fact that because of the massive deficit spending, a dollar you held at the start of the Biden administration is only worth 85 cents. That damage has been done. So inflation rates are down since, you know, from the highs, from the 4-year high, But again, we've already devalued the dollar from a buck to 85 cents. That's why things still are unaffordable. So deficit spending has a consequence, which is why I've been screaming about it. But as I said, most people in Washington, D.C. are just whistling by that graveyard.
Very quickly here, as we start to wrap up, leaders of the Senate Finance Committee and House Ways and Means reached a bipartisan deal this week to expand multiple tax breaks. The deal would expand the child tax credit. Do you support this tax package?
I do not like social or economic engineering through the tax code. I've been pushing, as long as I've been there, to simplify and rationalize the tax code. The way you do that is you don't junk it up with all these special deductions or credits for, you know, this social program or that economic program for business. So I just want a simple tax code. So I would be opposing this deal. I don't think it has really much of a chance.
Even though it has a number of business provisions?
Correct. I don't like to economically or socially engineer through the tax code. We need a simple tax code to be far better. A simple tax code with even potentially lower rates would be a better way to get and achieve economic growth, which is the number one component of a solution for all the economic and fiscal problems we have.
Senator Johnson, thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great day. Take care.
You too. Ron Johnson is a Republican U.S. Senator representing Wisconsin, sits on the Senate's Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, along with the Senate's Budget Committee and its Finance Committee. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.